Blog Talk Radio.
We had Charlie, Trippy, and Gino Marquette. If you're searching for a champion, they're your best bet. With Oscar quarterback, like Donnie Lou Jack, or even Sid Luffin, as a matter of fact. Do you remember Red Brains, the galloping ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. You had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Y.A. Tino, Allie Madison, hey, I remember all those guys from back in the day.
It's a sort of thing, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows, weekend warriors toe to toe. Football, 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 football.
Yes, sir. Football, football, football. That's the way it goes. Okay. I'm Big Mike. Coming at you with another episode of CMT Firestorm, where we give you raw, uncut, unedited, and completely, completely biased opinions about anything and everything to do with football. Today we got our full panel on. Today everybody's rocking and ready to get it cracking. Coming at us, the mouth of the South, Tampa, Florida. What's going on, Clavel?
What's up, man? What's good? Ready? Incognito, Winston, let's do it.
All right, all right. Coming at us from the Windy City, Chi-Town Mike. What's cracking, Mike?
What's going on? It was good. I was wrong about my Bears, but wait, you did it. I'm feeling good right now, man. Let's talk. Get it going.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, too.
Coming at us from the Lone Star State. Big Tex. What's going on, Tex?
What's going on, buddy, man? We're going to have a good one tonight.
All right. Looking forward to it.
I can't wait for Tommy Rowley calls, man. I know he was saying
some
stuff. I can't wait.
My goodness. Before we get started, I want to give a special shout-out to my dad. Today's his birthday. I won't say his exact age, but he's old. Anyway, love you, Dad. All right, let's get it cracking. Let's start off with the reactions from last week. Big matchup. Big ACC. We have a couple of big ACC matchups this year. But this is a big traditional one. We had wide right, wide left. You know, we've seen, kickers crying over these games. These were always a big game. This game was not that close. This game, you know, I don't know. To me, it was a little bit closer than it showed in the score, actually, at least in the beginning-wise. Like I said, if you just look at the score, it looked like it was a blowout. But we're talking about University of Miami, Hurricanes versus Florida State Fighting Seminoles. So we saw Jameis Winston on the big stage, famous Jameis. He came through, had a decent game. Like I say, it was, you know, I think I might have seen a couple of chinks in FSU's armor. You know, like I said, I think if this was a regular Miami team, tell you the truth, I think they would have won this game. You know, if this was a regular, you know, if they really thought they were going to be back, I'd have to give them the win. But I got to give it up to FSU. They came out, played ball. When you drop 40 on them, you know, did what they can do. What you guys think about this, Clavel?
About the FSU Miami game?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I knew FSU was going to win. I said that. And you guys know where I stand. I mean, FSU just clearly showed that by the end of the year, they're going to be the number one team in the country. Now, I know you're going to consider and say, you know, Winston, you know, he made two picks. You know, you're going to overhype that stuff. And then, you know, he threw the ball to the guy 5 yards and he ran 70 yards down the field or whatnot. Hey, you know what? He made two mistakes at the beginning of the game. He did what he had to do to win the game, and that's the mark of a champion right there. And I think, you know, it's a learning experience for him. Miami hit him in the mouth. He responded.
Okay.
That's all I have to say for right now.
For
right now.
Wow. All right, Jack. What do you take away from it?
Well, you know, being a Miami fan and all, I mean, I knew Florida State would win. I never doubted that they wouldn't. Miami, they're not all the way back yet. And I mean, that's evidence. And you know, homers go, oh, the U is back, the U is back. You know, they were ranked number 7. They were a borderline top 10 team in my eyes. So, you know, they were going into a Lions Den, and you know they were going to get 8. And as far as Florida State, you know, they're looking like a contender for a BCS title. I can't say that I saw chinks in Jameis Winston's armor because I think the kid is simply having a great year. I don't believe he's a great player. You know, people are always in a moment with these guys. It's like I posted on Facebook last week. I'm sitting back, you know, I'm at the bar looking at the game with a couple of friends that know what they're seeing. And, yeah, we had the same evaluation. You know, he's sitting there making these throws. This is, you know, and they're interceptions in the NFL. But these wide receivers are so good. Yeah, you know, that Devontae Freeman won that game the other day. Just let's not, you know, let's keep it real. He had a Marshall Faulk type football. You remember Marshall Faulk when he was with the Rams? Run for about 90-some yards, score about three or four touchdowns, catch for another 100 yards. I mean, Freeman was that's what caught my eye when I'm looking at the game. I'm like, man. You know, Florida State got a stable of running backs. You know, we know about the wideouts, but I'm looking at the backs, and I'm like, damn. You know, this guy, he's stretched to the sideline, he takes off upfield. You know, he's supposed to be dropped for a negative 1 yard loss, and he goes and he gets 6 yards, you know, when Miami has a bead on him. Now, I do think early on Miami was, it looked like they were trying to read everything that they were trying to see. Instead of just reacting to you know, what they saw. And you know, you're playing against athletes like they're playing against Bama. You're playing against Oregon. You're playing against FSU. You can't read. You have to react to what you see, because if you're reading and you're on the balls of your feet, you're just going to get burned. And that's what happened.
Yeah. It's kind of sad because the Hurricanes ended up losing out on Duke Johnson. He had an injury. I think he's out for the rest of the year, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Broken ankle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's gone for the year, so that kind of sucks too. And also, you know, like I said, we're continuing to see a regression in Stephen Moore. So that's kind of sad. There's a guy,
yeah,
you know, at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
People are talking about first round aspirations for him, and
nope.
His
stock is dropping, and this is a season. It's not a one-game thing. It's a season-long thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mike, what'd you take away from FSU Miami?
Well, I've got to say, from the highlights of it, I mean, it was a big win for Florida State. I was saying, I mean, for Winston, hey, quarterback, being his first time playing Miami, hey, he took care of business. Even though I was saying that some of his passes where he had the receivers that, you know, maybe done some short passes, but hey, he did what he had to do. He didn't cost them the game, and they won.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, Mel Kiper said Mel Kiper said, hey, if he had to came out this year, he would be the number one overall pick. So my question to the panel real quick is, where would you draft Winston if he came out next year? Where would you draft him?
I'm not drafting him top. If I had the number one pick overall, I'm not drafting him.
No. I mean, if you could pick, I mean, where would you pick him now as an evaluator? Where would you think he would fall?
Well, I don't, you know, it's hard to tell because, first off, we're not really, you know, nobody's really talking about an underclassman and where they take him. You know, you have a few people talking, but even if you got 3,000 people talking about it, it's not like it's 300,000 talking about it because, you know, he's an underclassman. So it's hard to tell. I don't think I'd touch him right now in the first round. First or second?
I respect Mel Kiper. I respect Mel Kiper, but wasn't Mel Kiper assured that Geno Smith was going to be the number one pick last year?
Yeah.
Well, no, he says that for a lot of people, and they fall and rise. Come on, Kelly, Mike, you know that. It was a fall and rise. He said Daquan Bowers was going to be number one. He said Andrew Luck was going to be the number one pick, too. He said Andrew Luck was going to be the number one pick, too.
Kiper misses more than he hits.
I don't know about that. He does not miss more than he hits. You're talking about regards to number one overall picks? You're talking about regards to number one overall picks?
I think he missed a lot, man. Remember
you're talking about his player evaluation.
Yeah, at the beginning of last season, he was saying Matt Barkley was going to be the number one pick. And it's not a science, bro. It's nothing exact. I mean, that's my point exactly. He can say, yes, Jameis will be number one, and then Jameis might not go through the fifth round. You know, who knows? I mean, me personally, like I said, if I were to rate him right now, I couldn't give him a first round pick. I mean, I couldn't give him a first round rating. You know, I mean, like I said, like Chuck said, the kid is nice. He's gonna get better with time, though. You know. He's gonna, you know, if he stays well coached, he's gonna learn how to make those throws right now. But like Dex said, if you watch the game, a lot of those throws that he's making are picks on another level.
Yes, man. I mean, them wide receivers, I was like, dang, you know, Florida State ain't never had no group of wide receivers like that ever.
Man, this group of wide receivers is better than when they had Menace and Bolden and all that. I literally believe all three of these dudes. Like I said, they're gonna be contributors on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Benjamin, like I said, Benjamin might be the best one. He's not even starting.
Exactly.
That's number three, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Big dude. He out there standing next to linebackers. I thought he was a tight end.
Man. You feel me? You know, like I said.
Yeah, he's pretty. I mean, they got the athletes, man.
I mean, I'm not going to say Jameis isn't going to be the truth. Like I said, give him 2 years, and he might be
the truth.
Right now.
I want him to have 2 years.
Like I say, anybody
and
who
he hasn't even,
him number
we,
one right now is going to lose their
and,
job.
And you got folks, yeah. And you got folks talking about they take him number one overall, based on what he hasn't seen 5% of what he's going to see football wise.
Nope. Mhm.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying I would take him number one. I think, like you said, he is not necessarily in terms of the mechanics, the footwork. He's not up there maybe with Bridgewater. I don't think Bridgewater is way head over shoulders above him. But I think that if you put him in the fire, I think he has the mental toughness and the ability to figure it out within a year. And then in the long term, I think he would be better.
He hasn't seen it yet, but I think he
could figure it out. I think he will figure it out quickly. If he gets to the next level, if he were to get out next year, he might be able to.
But this is a kid who haven't even figured out how to wear the contact lenses yet. Did y'all read that?
What I'm saying is, I gotta say something after you said that. Yeah, he can't even figure out his contact lenses.
That's why he does that squinting. You know, when he squints to the sidelines, so he can't see.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you about accuracy? Being truthful.
If he's accurate like that, I mean, goodness, with his eyes squinted, shoot. I mean, I want to know how accurate it is when his eyes
are
squinted.
So when you put in your contacts, if that could better your game, think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It depends on him. I don't know what he felt. Maybe he was more, he could see better without the contacts or with the contacts. I don't know. But the point I'm making is that, yeah, I want him to stay longer. I want him to stay all 4 years, get his paper, maybe get a master's, use them for them using you. But if he were to come out, if he could come out, I think he would figure it out with about a year. He would go through his struggles, obviously, and then he would figure it out, and then the second year he'd be ready to do it.
I mean, that's a big deal.
Bridgewater, I think he's going to figure it out, though, man. What'd you say?
I mean, look, Tim Couch never figured it out. He was one of the most polished college passers of all time. He never figured it out. And I think this guy
has the ability to do it. I think this guy has the ability to figure it out, you know. And that's the point I'm saying. That's why I would take him over Bridgewater if both came out this year.
Mm-hmm. I'm begging
that Bridgewater doesn't go to Tampa. But it may happen. That's what it looks like. It may be happening. but anyway.
I'll continue on that in our NFL section. As much as you want Glennon to play bad, he ain't been horrible.
I never said I wanted Glennon to be bad. What are you talking about? I never said that. I said he's going to end up being bad. I said he will be bad. I did say that. I never said I wanted him to be bad. And he is bad. He's the worst quarterback out of all of them in the rookie class. What are you talking about, man? Are you going through this intermediate checkdown routes? He's accurate because he does these intermediate checkdowns? When the game's on the line, he can't deliver. And he's had ample opportunities to do that. But anyway, we can talk about that in the NFL. You guys say what you got to say, and then I'm not going to say anything in return.
Okay. Mike, you have any other thoughts about Evans? You might have me.
Hopefully next year it'll be better. I know there's a whole lot of partying out there.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let me bring in a caller then. Let me bring in Big Business James from the A50. James, what's going on? You're on Tennessee Fire Front.
Hey, what's going on, man? Yeah, that thing with my Glennon was hilarious, bro. Most of us last week pretty much saw that we knew that Florida State was going to win and it wasn't even going to be close. To me, what I saw in the second half and, you know, performances in the first half, I didn't see anything from Miami to make it even a game. Those two mistakes by Jameis Winston pretty much, you know, gave Miami those 14 points. Otherwise, you know, the defense didn't stop them. Florida State only had one punt, I mean, that whole game, and that was in the fourth quarter. Otherwise, they weren't pretty much, you know, stopped by the Miami defense. They had over 500 yards on them.
What do you think? You definitely think this means that Miami was overrated?
Yeah, going back to what I said last week, I mean, I didn't see anything from Miami in those previous weeks that showed for them to be a top 10 team. In that Miami versus Florida game, if Florida didn't make those turnovers, they would have probably won that game. Because they were in the red zone at least one time when they had one of those turnovers against Miami. And that game was pretty close. So that should tell you right there, you know, how Miami plays against, you know, big teams, one. And two, it was like, I think Tech said, you know, they were reading a lot of the plays on the field instead of reacting to the plays on the field. And you can't do that against Florida State.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I was surprised. I was surprised by Miami's linebackers. They were just flat footed. They were just waiting on something to happen. Man, what are you waiting? You can't wait. I mean, you know, just
it isn't like they're Jonathan Villain and DJ Williams out there on the field. You don't have to make the play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, man, that was kind of different. So, like I said, I think, you know, I think that, you know, Miami, you know, I think this was just, you know, their year where, you know, they had a good run of games, but they're just not quite there. Like I said, kind of like, you know, kind of like SC was 2 years ago, you know, when they went 10-2, and they really, you know, but they really wasn't. You know, everybody, oh, they're back, and they came out with a number one ranking last year, and, you know, down there, you know, barely made 500, you know. So I think, you know, like I said,
well,
I think, you know, Miami,
little...
you know.
No, I was saying there might be a little good thing to come out of it. Miami can end up winning all the rest of their games and then, you know, end up being crushed by SSU again.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's highly possible. That's highly possible.
Yeah, but Duke is gone for the year. They don't look good when Duke's gone for the year. I just think they're going to lose some more games, man.
That's an injury. That's going to hurt. And like I said, I think that's gonna expose that might expose Stephen Morris even more. You know.
But the other running back, Dallas, his name is, he's not too bad either. He had a big game about 2 weeks ago. And their last game before they played Florida State, I saw him play. I mean, he's pretty good. So I know he might not be better than Duke, but he's pretty good. You know, we all know about Duke. I mean, in the past they always have running backs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one more thing about Florida State. Yeah, they got Kevin Benjamin, number one, 6'5", 235 pounds.
But that upside like that, he's definitely going to be playing.
Dude ain't like I said, the dude ain't no joke, man. You know, and like Tech said, if they get that running back Freeman playing like that, you know. You know, if he can play like that in a national championship game, they're gonna put themselves in a good position to win. You know, like I said, it was a good game. You know, like I said, it kind of went, you know, along the lines of where we expected it to go to. I'm just disappointed in Stephen Morris. I just, you know, I don't want to reiterate that again. I really thought he would take the next step until, you know, and become a great Miami quarterback. And he's kind of regressed. He's kind of sad. James, I want to get a couple more callers in.
Hey, this is Stephen Morris' senior year, right?
Yeah, he's a senior. Let me get in 770. Hi, you're on with CMP Parts. 770. Okay.
770.
Okay, we got a call from the 914. 914, you're on with CMP Firestorm.
Yeah, what's going on, fellas? This is Eric. What's going on? What's the topic?
Right,
what's going on,
how's
Eric?
It going, man? We're talking about FSU Miami.
Oh, yeah. FSU, just, you know, they did what I knew they would do. You know, big win, 41-14 over a game Miami. You know, Jameis did what he had to do. The defense was on point, and I still expect him to make a beat. You know, so I mean, they're right. What are they? They came in at number two this week, so I mean, they're right on par. I mean, I think they're really the only team that could contend with Alabama. I mean, they're a couple, you know, Oregon, obviously. I mean, they're the top three. And then, you know, like Tech said, after those three, then it's everybody else. So, I mean, I'm still on the FSU bandwagon. I still think they can contend for a national championship.
Okay. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, you got Oregon and FSU that are right. You know, they're going to be right next to each other in the rankings. I think if Oregon, I'm almost certain that Oregon beats Stanford tomorrow, they're going to leapfrog back over FSU, and it's going to come down to the wire. Like, you know, it's going to come down to the wire, so it's going to be close. Looks like I know Oregon's probably going to get to play UCLA in the Pac-12 championship. I don't know how the ACC breaks down their conferences, though, who they might play last. I think we're saying they might play Miami again, right? But, you know, who knows how highly ranked Miami might be by the, you know, with the injury to Duke Johnson, if they, you know, if they're going to win out or, you know, how they're going to be by the end of the season. But anyway, let's move on to our our games coming up for this week. We got three really big games coming up. First one is LSU Alabama. This game has kind of gone under the radar. It's kind of weird. Like I said, it's kind of weird. This whole, you know, Alabama, as good as they are, it seems like they've kind of been under the radar all season to me. Has it kind of been like that way to you guys?
It's equivalent. Because it's equivalent to the Chicago Bulls in the 90s when the season was going on. You know, you didn't need to talk about them because you knew they were going to be there at the end of the day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Alabama is right now. They're on the level of the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan in the 90s. That's where they are right now.
Okay. And that's pretty much a dynasty. I mean, Alabama's a dynasty. You know they're going to be there. You know they get the recruit. I mean, their program is pretty much a notch below the NFL when it comes to college teams. So you know they're going to be in the national championship picture pretty much year in and year out. I mean, especially with Nick Saban leading the pack.
Like I said, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, we've been hearing a lot about, you know, there's been a lot of news about Nick Saban this past week in that Texas job. I don't know.
He ain't leaving.
You know, like I said, who knows?
He ain't leaving, man.
Did you hear what he just now said recently?
Yeah, if there was only one place to go, it would be Texas.
Yeah, I mean.
He ain't leaving Alabama. Why would he want to leave?
Make a statement like that.
He didn't make a statement like that. It was his agent that made a statement like that. He didn't make the statement. It was his agent.
And then he said
he's staying at Alabama today. He said to the media today that he's staying at Alabama for good.
He said that today?
Yeah, he said that today at the media. In the media. I'll try to put that up on the website, CMT Firestorm. But
I think he just got to wait it out and see. I think he just got to wait it out. That being said, I don't know why he would leave Alabama for Texas. When you got that 5 to 7 hour radius around Tuscaloosa that you just own. You know, you're running all the way into Florida. Why are you going to Texas?
And he didn't get Winston, though. He did not get Winston.
Texas got the money. You know, Texas is, I mean, think about it. If Saban goes to Texas, they'd be unstoppable. Honestly, you know, with the UT money machine behind them, they'd be unstoppable, man. They'd be able to offer everything recruits would want, you know.
Sure about that because.
But I think. I was fixing to say I understand what you're saying, Mike. I think these recruits are, they starting to, you know, they warming up to Kevin Sumlin. So
yeah.
You know, if Sumlin, if he's at A&M, they will now have to contend with Texas A&M as far as getting the best athletes in Texas is concerned.
Well, hold on.
That's going to be an issue.
I mean, they're warming up to Sumlin, but are they also just going to him by default by how bad Texas has been recently?
No, because
I know that those are guys that would usually have gone to, you know, these are usually guys that would have gone to UT if UT was hot right now.
Well, one, they went to the SEC and they had some success, and they went into Tuscaloosa and won.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of Johnny Football, though. You take Johnny Football off that team, what is Texas A&M?
You take Jameis Winston
Ryan
from Florida
Tannehill.
State, or well, you take Mariota from Oregan. You take Hundley
from
UCLA.
Oregon's a still functional team without Mariota.
Yeah, they're a functional team.
I don't think Texas A&M is going to be a good team without Johnny Manziel.
I was looking at
their roster, Claudio. They got some boys on their team now.
I don't know if they're
going to be a top 10 team, but I could see them being a top 25 team without Johnny Manziel.
Now, I want to follow up on what you just said, Tex, about they opening up to Sumlin. Now, me personally, I think Sumlin should leave once Johnny Manziel leaves because, you know, and I'm going to tell you why. Okay, listen to me. Listen to me, Shotown. Listen to me. You know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen here, and I said this at the beginning of the year. You know, I said this. You know who's going to get the brunt of Johnny Manziel's antics from the offseason. You know who's going to get the brunt of that. So if Johnny Manziel goes for the draft, which he will, he's going to go for the draft. He's going to lead for the draft. And if they start losing some games next year, if they start losing some games next year, they're going to look at him. They will look at Matt Johnson to someone. I'm telling you. So if I were him, if I were him, I would go immediately. I would leave USC,
I don't,
you know, NFL, NFL. I would leave. I would leave immediately.
Let Carmel finish for you, then go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I would leave immediately. Or maybe you could do a combo. You know, Johnny Manziel go to the pros. He and someone come with him. You can do a combo, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You can get Johnny Manziel and someone to come with them to the Bucs, you know, to replace Shiano or at Oakland or something like that. So that would be my suggestion. That would be my personal suggestion for Kevin Semel.
A lot of successful coaches used to do that, like back in the day. Like if they knew their quarterback was going to be the number, you know, or at least they try to get on the staff wherever their quarterback was going.
Yeah, it's not that far-fetched.
Mike, what
are
you saying?
Man, Kevin Sumlin, they just gave that man an extension. They probably again because it's going to probably be NFL talk again where they're going to give him another extension. He ain't leaving Texas A&M, man. The man
no, he
man
should. He should.
Year. He's been there 2 years, going on three. Why is he? I mean, he's, you know.
Mike, if he gets an NFL job, he's gone, okay?
Oh, yeah, that's not.
I would leave because he's going to get the brunt. He will get the brunt of Manziel's actions if they start losing games next year. And I think they will start losing games next year because I don't see who's replacing Manziel.
Well, he better
step his game up then. Let's hope so.
His game is stepped up. I mean, what are you talking about? His game is stepping up. What are you talking about? They're having a Texas A&M. You know, they're not having a year like they had last year. They still having a good solid year this year.
Yeah, because Manziel was the driving force of the team this year. He's clearly the driving force. He's going to be going to the NFL next year.
Yeah, but, you know, just like other teams. Just like other teams, Clarell, you know.
No, you say
these quarterbacks are driving.
No, that's not true. Florida State's still a functional team without Winston, for example. They're a national championship contender with Winston. Alabama's still a functional team without McCarron.
Don't even say
Oregon's still a functional team without Mariota. Texas A&M, they're losing three or four games without Manziel on that team because they do not have a good defense
on that team. They might lose three or four games with him on there.
They have a very young, very talented defense.
I've looked at the roster. They do have talent, man. I think they got another guy. They got at least two first round picks on their team this year, besides Manziel and Matthews, and they got another lineman that's going to go first round too. So like I said, Texas A&M has always had talent. They just haven't always been big. But if you look at their over the years, even when they were in the Big 12, they've always had talent. You know, they always get guys, but you know, they just haven't been good. You know, but they always put out a talented player, and you'd be like, where did you come from? Oh, A&M, you know.
I guess two can never get Texas, you know, when they always come against Texas, you know. Texas always got
they were always getting overshadowed by UT too. You know,
I seen two stories about what we're talking about. First, I seen that A&M has no desire to rekindle rivalry with UT, and I'm hearing about the agent again. Only Texas could coax Saban.
Yeah. I mean, it could happen. It could happen.
He ain't leaving.
Okay, besides that, we got a LSU Alabama, which is gonna be a pretty big game. Like I say, I think Alabama looks like it's gonna be a sleeping giant. And LSU, I mean, are people writing off LSU? Do y'all kind of get that feeling like it's just a foregone conclusion that Alabama's gonna win this game?
Yeah, I think people are writing off LSU, which kind of concerns me. I mean, obviously, you know, LSU and Alabama, man, that's like a rivalry. And oof, man, I will be glued to the TV. But, you know, I mean, it'll be a close game. I think it's going to be a close game.
This LSU team has a lot of weapons on it, man. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm looking at, you know, you look at their roster, you know, you look at the way Mettenberger's been playing, and this is one of the first years they've been actually utilizing their wide receivers too, which is scary, and they're performing. You know, you're getting Odell Beckham finally performing, Jarvis Landry, you know, these guys, these are all five-star dudes that, you know, that have been there, you know, 2 and 3 years, but they haven't had a quarterback throwing the ball, so. You know, now they're finally getting a chance to, you know, to show what they can do. And their running back, Hill, he ain't no joke, man. He's, you know, he's been beast mode all year, you know.
I know.
So it's going
like
to it's gonna, it's gonna be, it's gonna be tough.
I know this.
Well, I mean, the issue is that they won't be able, LSU won't be able to, Hill's not going to be able to have the game type of game he's going to have because Alabama doesn't give up anything running the ball. So, I mean, it's up to Mettenberger to win the game, man. I mean, he has the weapons to do it. Can he do it, though?
Mettenberger's been balling this year, though, Clausel.
He has been balling. I said he sucked last year. He's been balling this year. He has been balling this year. But I don't think they're going to be able to generate enough offense to beat an Alabama in Alabama. Unless they come with a great plan, like they did last year. Last year they had a really good plan. So, we'll see.
Okay. Eric, let me put you back on hold. I want to bring in another caller, 813-784.
Hey, fellas.
How's it going, fellas?
How's it going?
What's going on,
Matt? I was going to share some more light about the story I'm just hearing right now. I'm reading on the screen. It says, the agent for Nick Saban told Texas officials in January that Texas is the only school he would consider leaving Alabama for.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, that was out earlier.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, man. Right,
he dismissed the rumors.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. What are we talking about?
What are your thoughts on the upcoming LSU Alabama game?
I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's a better football game than I think it's going to be. Unfortunately, I think it's going to turn out a lot like FSU Miami. But
really?
I'm hoping it's a closer game.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you think Bama's going to blow them out?
I think 14 points at least.
Okay. That's interesting. I don't know why, but for some reason. Like I said, I know Alabama should win this game. It's probably going to, but something is telling me to put my money on LSU. I just don't know why. And I'm not a big LSU fan or by any means or anything. But and this game is.
If you want to donate your money, go to MathisRaymond.org. Click on the donate button, and you can donate your money right now. I'm just saying.
I say it's going to be close, like 7 points, only because it's a rivalry game. I mean, you know LSU's going to come with their A game. So that's the only reason I'm saying it's going to be a close game, like 7 points, something
like
that.
But you got Bama to win, though, right?
Trying not to be the homer that he really is.
I know.
I watched the game last year, man.
Claudel's slick. He's been doing that all season. It hasn't been fooling me at all. So, no, I'm not following
him. I've been perfect all year with my predictions, believe it or not. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. I've been perfect with all my predictions. I'm talking about with all college football predictions. I predicted the Bucs would be close to Seattle. I predicted that it would be tough for the first half. Yeah, for the FSU game, Miami, because everybody was writing off Miami. So I said Miami's going to be close for the first half, and then the FSU would blow them out in the second half. It's all on tape.
I'm gonna review those tapes so I can expose you next week.
If he was available, he'd be the number one overall pick. I mean, I was predicting that. Yeah.
Fossil's
you
a black
Chris
Berman.
Number one.
He's a Schwam.
What'd you say?
I said you're the black Chris Berman.
Hey, I can see the future, man. I can see the future. But yeah, it's gonna be a close game, man. It's gonna be a close game.
But like I said,
it boils down to.
Right?
Yeah, I got Alabama winning because it boils down to Ken
Mettenberger. I'm actually more interested in Oregon Stanford.
Yeah, that's tomorrow. That's going to be a good game. Who you got in that one, Matt?
I don't know.
Your boy De'Anthony Thomas said they're going to put 40 on him. And he, you know, he's coming off an injury, so you know he's ready to play, man.
I'm a huge fan of Oregon's offensive coordinator. I like him. 5 years there, great job.
I replied to your post you put up on Facebook. You know, I told you, I said I think Oregon has a chance. If you look at what Oregon brings to the table with their running and their passing, and Byron Marshall for Oregon is a completely underrated running back. He's tearing it up this year. And you look at the fact they're getting De'Anthony Thomas back. None of those teams in the top four, Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State, and Florida State, none of them have a weapon like De'Anthony Thomas. None of them. He hasn't really been in the league this whole year. Baylor would have to totally just smush Oklahoma for them to get up, you know, for them to really get back up in the argument because people are kind of unsure about them. But like I said, they're another undefeated team. And, you know, Lake Chief Trunk, he's a true student. I'm big on him. I think he's going to be the number one running back that year when he comes out. But, you know, for those top four teams, Anthony Thomas, he's 007, man. And, you know, and he plays for Oregon. And I think, you know, if they figure out a way to get him back like he was 2 years ago, you know, get him back in that game breaker role. I think that's the way you break these kind of games open. Get the ball in his hands, let him do what he does.
My question about Oregon is their defense. I know they're seventh in the country in scoring, but on scoring defense, but I don't know if they have the grit and toughness to stop Alabama, because Alabama, I think fundamentally Alabama would beat them for a national title if they played, because Alabama will control the time of possession, methodically and slowly break them down, and keep the offense off the field.
Well, the thing about Oregon is, Oregon, for some reason, I guess because their offense and also because they play in the Pac-12 and everybody views this conference as not a defensive conference, their defense has been underrated for like about the past 4 or 5 years. And if you look at some of the players that they've been producing, like Kiko Alonso, like that, you know, who nobody even heard about when they was at Oregon, and we probably didn't even know they went to Oregon. And who are coming out, you know, probably going to be, you know, defensive rookie of the year, maybe, you know, player of the year. Then, you know, they get quality linebackers
out of there, too. There's been some pretty quality linebackers out of
there. Exactly, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, they get guys that are just, you know, they're just underrated. And, you know, they can ball, man. You know, like I said, they can ball. They put guys out there. And,
hey,
you know,
I think overall the Pac-12, I think they're one of the best conferences this year. I mean, overall, top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm willing to say
they're the best
but they're one of the best.
Yeah, like I said, they're putting a good product out there. The only thing I tell people, this is what stopped me from saying I would take Mariota if I was an NFL scout. The only thing that bothers me about Oregon is their deep passing game. I have not seen Mariota go deep on a consistent basis. And, you know, he's good. He's very good. He's highly accurate on the intermediate to short passing game. But on that deep ball, I just haven't seen it from him. You know, that's the one thing that bothers me with him, and that'll bother me with him looking at him from an NFL point of view, too. Is, you know, I haven't seen him, you know, and, you know, chink did the long ball, you know, and I haven't seen that from him.
You know,
but other than
same,
that. You know.
That's the same knock that I heard on Nick Foles coming out of college.
Yeah.
You think there's a good comparison there?
I don't know. I mean, liked Cole's passing game when he was at a zona. I thought, you know, like I said, I thought he was an excellent passer. I'm still not sold on him as an NFL quarterback though. I mean, he has good games. You know, he had a good game 2 years, you know, a year ago, and everybody thought he should start, and then he got the chance to start and he sucked it up. You know, kind of like, you know, Matt Flynn had a good game and he got a $7 million contract.
I mean, you didn't mess it up. That's not true. Nick Foles didn't mess up the – you talking about last year? He didn't mess it up.
Yeah, he did. Nick Foles for
– No, he did not. I was at the game when he played at Tampa. He never messed it up. What happened was he lost the job in training camp to Michael Vick.
No, dude, Nick Foles
was just felt that Michael Vick
was
better.
Are you crazy?
No, I'm talking about last year. That's what his rookie year was last year. His rookie year was last year.
And Buck's secondary was horrible. It was horrible.
I felt like he did what he did as a rookie to earn the starting quarterback position this year at for Philly. But for some reason, well, obviously the new regime came in with Chip, Nick Foles, et cetera. I mean, not Nick Foles, but what's the guy's name? Chip Kelly. So, you know, I'm pretty sure Michael Vick did more of their offense. They went with Michael Vick instead of Nick Foles. I mean, I felt like Nick Foles should have started, and Michael Vick's the one that's because he had a pretty decent end of the year last year.
Well, going into camp, he didn't lock down the job. Vick was the one
that
locked down
the job for some whatever reason. I don't know why. I mean, I guess he lost it out.
You're looking at the one game he had against Tampa where he threw for 300. I'm looking at it right here. He threw for 380 yards and 2 touchdowns. Did you look at what he did? That was his one win out of 7 games, Clausel. Oh, so you caught him on his one win out of 7 games.
But yeah, you say Mike Glenn is playing good now, right? But you're gonna minimize what Nick Foles did last year, but yet you're gonna hype up what Mike Glennon did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you did the show. Hold on,
I said he's better than Josh Freeman, and he is.
He is.
That's some BS now. All right, whatever. All right, okay, right now. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Right now, based on the performance of the game.
Let's move on that in NFL. I want to wrap up this college section because I want to talk about this. I was talking to a guy about this USC game, and we got on the schedule. Ed Orgeron has won 3 out of the past 4 games at SC since replacing Lane Kiffin. It could have been 4 out of 4. He had a very close game against Notre Dame. There's a lot of people behind him who want him to stay on as a permanent head coach. And the question right now is,
I'm one of them. I'm a big Lane Kiffin. I'm a big Lane Kiffin and Monty Kiffin fan.
Or do we look? Do we look somewhere else? I was talking to a guy the other day. Basically, this dude, he has knowledge about SC's program. Basically, what he was saying was that they're going to go with somebody else, no matter what. Unless Orgeron can win out and win a bowl game, which is highly unlikely. They're going to go with somebody else, and not because of Ed Orgeron, because he's an okay coach and he's an excellent recruiter. But they really want to make a big splash with this hire and kind of put SC back on the map as a destination, as a hot spot, and that's the main reason from what I've been hearing. You know, Orgeron, the guys right now, they like Orgeron. The guys in the locker room love Orgeron, but this pick is going to be more for coming up recruits, because they've been kind of lacking in recruiting lately. And like I said, they want to make a splash. So, from what I've heard, unless a miracle can happen, unless they win out and win their bowl game, or, even then, they're saying Orgeron more than likely is not going to be coming back. What do you guys think? You guys think he should, I think he should come back based on what he's done, or what do you guys think about that? Should they go somewhere else? They have interviewed Lovie Smith. He's kind of up there in their candidates right now.
Well, actually, they didn't interview Lovie Smith. Jay Glazer confirmed that from Lovie Smith.
Today?
It was like three days ago. CBS put out the report that sources said that Lovie Smith interviewed for the job, and then Jay Glazer asked Lovie Smith, and Lovie Smith said, no, I never interviewed for the job.
Yeah, he sure did. I read that too. Yep.
So.
I don't know if I believe Lovie on that. Like I said, because I got this directly from the SC website that says that they confirmed that they talked to Lovie Smith about the job. I don't know. Like I said, even if it is Lovie,
they might have talked to him. offered him time to come to interview, but he did not interview. That could have been the case. But as far as Ed Orgeron, I really want to hear him say, "Cookie, nom, 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 nom."
Yeah, they don't want that type of dude talking talking like that. Now, maybe, you know, if this was someplace like Georgia, Alabama, one of these southern places, you know, they can get with a guy sounding like that. But, you know, at USC, they don't want that out there.
But the problem here's the problem. You get a coach in, let's say Ed Orgeron wins out. Is that who they really wanted for coach? No.
No, they don't want him.
I mean, they want the impact now. If Orgeron does well, now you have him there. He's now, you know, he was the rebound chick, and he's not supposed to be there anymore because you found the other one you want to be with, and you can't really be with them because the rebound chick's there hanging around making shit awkward.
Exactly. So who do you think they might eventually try to get, Matt?
Del Rio, probably.
Yeah, that sounds like a better fit. Right.
He's interested in the job, by the way.
What about what about these Don Drew numbers?
About what?
What'd you say, Mike?
John Gruden. Okay, what do you guys? Have you guys heard anything about those rumors?
I didn't hear that either.
Yeah,
hey, it's possible.
Yeah, I've been hearing that there's the boosters have been trying to get John Gruden to come in and interview, and they really want him to be the next coach.
I'll tell you this: John Gruden won't do it. Won't do it for this reason, because he's already been out for 4 years now. He doesn't have to wake up early in the morning. He doesn't have to stay late at night. He's not having to prepare. He's still getting paid a lot of money. And he's just to do whatever the hell he wants to do when he wants to do it with the ESPN. Why would I go back to flaring up my colon for about the same amount of money with less flexibility and all that script? I would.
Yeah. And you kind of,
I would
on your show,
ZY Banana XC Silver. That's what I would
on your show a couple of weeks ago, you kind of broke down Gruden's coaching history, which I didn't know exactly. You kind of broke it down how he became the coach of Tampa Bay, which I didn't even know that that was a situation. Does he even have any college experience?
College experience?
Yeah.
I didn't really look back that far. Well, I was looking down his hiring by the Glaze. He was hired by Malcolm Glaze, not the son. He was hired by Malcolm. And Malcolm moved the world to get him from the thing is, John Gruden's been in the NFL forever. He's been with the Packers, been with the 49ers, all over the league. He was the quarterback's coach when Favre first got there. So he's worked with a lot of very reputable teams and been in good positions throughout his career. And he got a lot of money and put in the right place with a lot of good players that Dungy worked his ass and lost his job for to turn around and win that championship with him. You know, he's one of those perfectionists. So maybe that's part of why some of it didn't work out. But he kind of falls into the same category as when people talk about coaches. It's kind of like Lane Kiffin did. He was good at play calling, and it kind of knew. I mean, he paid his dues a lot more than Lane Kiffin. Let me put it that way. But it's not. He never really proved himself as a head coach. But he just happened to be in the right place at the right time and caught lightning in the bottle. And, you know, and won a Super Bowl.
I want to pose this question to the panel before we wrap up here with college. The transition from a college coach to the NFL, is it something that every coach, I mean, we've seen Jimmy Johnson do it. Pete Carroll's having limited success. Well, he's being kind of successful right now, even though he went from NFL to college, back to NFL. Can you come
he's
from just a student
right
college background and then go to the NFL and be successful? Do you guys think that that's possible right now?
Yeah, I do. I think it has to be the right type of person. It has to be a guy, more of a manager, kind of like a Jimmy Johnson was. Jimmy Johnson, I mean, he was a hard ass, but, you know, he was a tough guy. And then, you know, he let the, what is it, Norv Turner, Dave Wanstead do the coaching. He got to be kind of like be that manager kind of guy, like a Kevin Sumlin. I think Kevin Sumlin would be a very good NFL coach. I think Les Miles would be a very good NFL coach. Nick Saban, he would not be an NFL coach. He's too much of a control freak, and nobody would that'd be like a higher version of Greg Schiano, you know, just a better Greg Schiano, basically, you know. So,
I thought Les Miles was that type of guy too.
No, Les Miles is more of a laid back. He lets his assistants be the hard behinds. His coaches. They're the guys that are the fireballs. You know, he's the kind of guy that's a laid-back, chill kind of a dude. I wouldn't say he's a laid-back, chill kind of a dude. He's just, you know, he has his little quirky – he's not really a yeller type of thing. Well, not really. He's not. He's more of a laid-back kind of a guy.
Do you think also, like you said, with the right kind of program, do you think that maybe since Johnson was at a program like Miami – where he was used to dealing with big egos, you think that kind of prepared him better for dealing with NFL guys?
I don't know. I just think he had very good assistants, man. I mean, that guy had very good assistants. I mean, we had Dave Wanstead, Norv Turner, man. Those guys are pretty good in their respective, you know, for defense and offense. So, I mean, he had the right pieces in place in terms of the coaching staff to succeed. And the resources with Jerry Jones.
What do you think about that? Dex, what do you think about that?
Is he on?
Hello? Jamal?
Okay, I'm sorry, fellas. I'm back. I had to deal with something real quick. What's going on?
No problem. I was talking about Jimmy Johnson. Well, not just Jimmy Johnson, but the transition of a college coach to the NFL. Do you think it's good? Do you think it's possible right now? What do you think about it? And we were talking about Jimmy Johnson, how he went from – you know, he's probably one of the only successful guys. Him and Pete Carroll is kind of doing it right now, too. But Carroll went from the NFL to college and back to the NFL.
I guess it would just depend on the personality of the coach and what they wanted to do. Pete Carroll is more relaxed. You know, Pete Carroll was a little bit unorganized when he came back to coaching the NFL, but he got it together. And he, you know, he took his team. He ran 400 guys through the facility, and he came up with his team. It really just depends on what you want and the guy's personality. You know, like Schiano, just, you know, rigid, just want to beat them down. You know, you can beat the kids down. You know, you can't drill grown men into the ground. So. It really just depends. It just depends on the coach, in my opinion, and his personality and just how he deals with players. And if he's able to teach, you know, there's teaching a young kid where, you know, you got so many scholarship athletes and you have, you know, you got 3-4-star players in one position when you get to the NFL. I mean, you still have great players, but, you know, now you have superstars, and, you know, this is the stuff that you have to deal with. And you have to manage your roster. You have to, you know, deal with guys, player A that might be making more than player B, and he needs to be on the field more than that player. You know, it's just different things to deal with in the NFL than it is in college. And again, it's just the coach's personality and how he deals with grown men.
Mike, do you have any thoughts about that?
That's maybe right there. It depends on how you are, how you can handle and to relate to the play as a grown man. It pretty much comes down to your style.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're hearing now in the transition, we keep seeing here of college coaches' names that may be heading to the NFL. I mean, so far, I mean, it's premature to say, but Chip Kelly, so far his system, like, is going to work in the NFL. Will he be successful?
Really?
I mean, so far, like I said, it's premature to say, but so far his system, they've been talking about, like, it's going to work. So far it's been, you know, successful scoring points. They just, they don't have a defense in Philly. But, and today, I mean, you know, it, so far the only really, really successful guy who made the transition is Jimmy Johnson. And now Pete Carroll got his second chance, so what he's done with Seattle right now, you know, they're doing pretty good. So I still say kind of wait and see. Wait and see approach. But if I had to pick one person who comes to either college ranks, I think that could be successful in the NFL, I probably would say Kevin Sumlin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, it depends what market, too.
What do you think about that?
It depends what market he goes to, also.
Like, how do you mean that?
Like, some media, he may not be able to deal with well. You know, some media he can, you know. Well, I don't know. I got a lot of respect for Lovie Smith, though. Lovie Smith, Chicago's a tough media place to deal with. I mean, that is tough. He got fired, but he had a very successful run in Chicago, so
yeah.
I have to give him his props for that. He had a very successful run.
He kind of reminded me of, like, your boy y'all got in New York there. You know, he was a guy who always seemed like he was on the hot seat, and then he would perform and end up saving his job. And
you're talking about
Coughlin? The last couple of, yes, like, oh, exactly, yeah. You know, he seemed like that type, you know, he was in that type, you know, but he just couldn't do it the past couple of years. But anyway, I want to get into some of the callers real quick. We've got a lot of callers on. Let me go to, let's see who's on here. 407, you're on with TNT Firestone.
What's going on?
What's going on, Steve?
Chilling, man. Got on the thing a little late.
Okay. Right now we're wrapping up our college talk right now. We talked about, we went over FSU Miami. We went over the upcoming Alabama and Oregon and Alabama LSU, Oregon and Stanford games. And we just talked about the possible coaching change in USC. So what do you want to talk about with us?
I don't know. That's so wide open with y'all. I was listening about the little coaching thing, the transitioning from the from college to the NFL. And I agree about the Jimmy Johnson thing. He had a good coaching staff, but you also got to understand he had a little more control to a certain extent until Jerry Jones got jealous. But in order for a college coach to be successful in the NFL, he has to have total control. And if you see Pete Carroll, even though he had those mishaps at the beginning, he was able to have – he's got more control than a, you know, average coach. He can do what he wanted to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just think if in order for a college coach to go from not having all the control to having a limited amount of control, it's harder for them to make the transition. So, you know, it's a lot. You got to answer to a lot more people than just the AD.
Exactly.
But with Nick Saban, I mean, in Nick Saban's defense, I mean, I heard Clausell say Nick Saban wouldn't have been a good coach in the NFL. I beg to differ. He just wanted all the control, which he wasn't going to get. I mean, the Dolphins thing went 6-10 that year, but the defense he brought to the table was one of the best defenses in the NFL. It just, I mean, they didn't have no quarterback. It was a lot of things he didn't want to deal with there. It's easier to go to Alabama and be the king and do whatever you want. College, you know, I think the transitions from the NFL to college should have been a lot easier. Ray Triano is just, I don't know about him. But, yeah, I think.
Yeah, that was a tough situation coming in Miami. Miami has been kind of a problem franchise for a while now since, you know, since 72 they went undefeated.
But let me put you on hold, Steve. I want to get in a couple of these callers before we go to NFL. Let me bring in, let's see, we got a, I've always been here for a while.
Yo. Yeah, it was going to go all the way back to the thing with the Alabama LSU and the Oregon Stanford matchups. I think Alabama LSU will be closer than, you know, folks think. You know, with that game being as close as it's been for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, I don't see how, you know, LSU will just, you know, go ahead and lay down to Alabama or have Alabama just go ahead and crush them. I just don't see it. And the other thing was about that was, you know, Clausell's comment about, you know, the Alabama team being like the Bulls in the 90s. I'm like, come on, son.
I kind of let that go when he said it. It was like, all right, to get him fired up.
Come on, yeah, that's a good to get him fired up, because, I mean, you, I don't know if, you know, some of these helmets are comparing this Alabama, you know, era to the USC's and the Miami's that we had in the early 2000s. So, how
are
you going?
Are you kidding me? Alabama's not up to those levels? See, that's what I'm talking about. Alabama's on that level of the USC's and the Miami's. Alabama's on that level.
No.
Yes. This is what separated to me.
I can tell
you
why.
If you remember, when Miami was winning and when SC was winning, people were talking about him like, oh, these are going to be some of the greatest teams of all time while they were still playing. Like I said, if you think about it, nobody's been talking about Alabama this year.
No, but whatever. Well, I'm just saying, our dynasty.
You know,
our dynasty.
Nobody said, oh, these guys are about to win their third chance. I mean, there's no hype behind these dudes. It's like they're just waiting to get beat almost, honestly.
Yeah, because they don't have the personalities that the Miami of the 80s did or the USC's did. I mean, Nick Saban's a square. He's a freaking square. And, I mean, you got Pete Carroll and then you have Jimmy Johnson. Those are characters. You know what I mean? That's why. When you talk about X's and O's, you talking about play on the field? Alabama's dynasty is just as equivalent to those dynasties.
No. We ain't even talking about Miami of the 80s. We're talking about the Miami of the 2000s with
Sam Dorsey
and those, Andre Johnson and those.
Hold on, let me get this straight. Now, I've always said this, and I said this. The 2001 Miami Hurricanes team is the best BCS team ever. There's no team that has been playing like that, even though I think Alabama in the future will have a team equivalent to that in the future. But when you compare a dynasty,
what, 10 years in the future?
Yeah, no, in the near future.
Yeah,
within 5 years. How do I figure out? Because we're loaded, man. Alabama's loaded with there's five-star talent left and right. But anyway, let me get here. When you compare dynasties, this Alabama dynasty now, this USC dynasty, the Miami dynasties, early 2000s, Miami dynasties in the 80s, Alabama is just as good as those. When you talk about the play on the field, it's just as good.
But nobody's talking about them.
Because they're not characters. That's why nobody's talking about them.
It doesn't even have to go into characters. It even has to go through results. Like, if you wanted to even bring up those Miami teams to the 80s, why don't you bring up Nebraska to the 90s? They were destroying.
Oh, yeah, Nebraska in the 90s. I'm sorry, them too.
They were
destroying in the Nebraska of the 90s.
Teams. They weren't beating teams. They were destroying teams. And who did you have on there instead of, like, what, who, Tommy Frazier and a couple of defensive guys? And who else was there? The running back.
Amon Green, Lawrence Phillips.
Yeah,
Lawrence Phillips.
Yeah.
Right.
You definitely
don't hear Alabama in the same breath as those dudes.
Remember the thing when USC was about to play Texas, they were talking about USC being one of the greatest teams of all time.
Yeah, which was that was not true, but anyway.
Oh, I know that was not true. That's why I bet against them.
when you win a national championship in 2009, 2011, and 2012, and you're going on your third straight, your fourth in the last 5 years, potentially. I mean, come on, man.
Think about it. No, he's talking about not even the sportscasters who left Alabama are talking about that. Seriously, think about it. Have you heard any sportscaster? I've heard not one sportscaster mention that all year.
And we're not a character. We don't have characters now, though. And Alabama's not really
a character. It's about free speech.
Alabama's not even really a marquee state.
Speech.
Southern California. Everybody talks about Southern California.
That's
Miami.
Everybody talks about Miami.
Come on.
If Alabama wins three in a row, that's unprecedented, dude. That's unprecedented stuff right there, and nobody's talking about it.
Hold it. Isn't Alabama one of the most storied college football programs in the country?
Ever.
Yeah,
exactly.
In history, it's the most storied ever.
Unprecedented stuff.
All right. In history. So with that being said, why aren't they being mentioned as far as like, oh, they're this great team, they're this, they're that.
They are talking about like that sometimes.
But you don't hear it from
you haven't
the
heard nobody say that not all year, Clavel. And I'm being completely truthful, and I haven't either, and neither of you. And you know it.
Wait a minute, I'm not going to even argue with you guys before.
Because you know it.
I'm done. Get the next call, man. I'm good.
All right, I'm going to bring you some more calls. Yeah, I'll put you back home.
There you go.
We got, you know it, man. We got, let's see who we got here. We got 813-409.
Watley.
Hello?
What's up, fellas?
What's going on, Charlie?
What's going on, man?
From you.
How y'all doing?
I
don't really think I want to talk about the college stuff because getting into Alabama and all of that, that's not something I think I can discuss. But I will discuss the idea of the coaches. And the transition from college to the NFL and NFL to college and what makes those coaches successful.
Okay.
I personally would think that in college, because these are kids coming from high school, coming from living in their mama and daddy's house, and going into this college where they're on their own for the first time, coaches have to be surrogate parents. And they have to be able to handle that idea of being surrogate parents so that they have to be control freaks. They have to be able to tell them, you get to stay in your room and your own punishment and you're doing this and you're doing that. But the transition from college to professional is another transition where these are no longer children, these are men. So once they get to be grown men and millionaire grown men, they are not wanting somebody telling them what they can do, when they can do it, and how they can do it. So that a coach in the professional leagues have to be facilitators versus dictators. So it's a situation of where in college, coaches have to be more of a dictator, more of a parent. This is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to do it. Whereas in the league, in professional league, you have to be more of a, okay, you know what you're going to do, you know what you got to do, you know why you're here, get it done. And that's a facilitator. And I think that's where Jimmy Johnson was successful. He didn't come from Miami to Dallas and just say, I'm the person, this is what you're going to do. He was more of a facilitator. That's why the guy in New York, the Giants, did so bad when he first got up there, because when he came from Boston College, he came up there trying to be a dictator, and everybody told him, we don't like this. And he changed the way that he was coaching, and the Giants turned into a good team. So I think that's where the transition comes in. Coaches have to learn to go from being the dictator and the substitute parent in college to being a facilitator of adult men.
I forgot to say, I forgot to say, though, fellas, Tom Coughlin came from the college ranks, too. You might have noticed, I don't know if you might have known it, but when Bill Parcells had sat down from the Giants, that time after y'all won your second Super Bowl, he was going to be the coach of the Giants, but then he went on to college and go coach Boston College. So Parcells, he was going to be the guy, but then he did too. Even though he didn't win that Super Bowl in Jacksonville, he did do pretty good in Jacksonville, though.
Yeah, but it ended up where the team started. Let's stop listening to him, and that's how he got fired.
He was there too long, though. But still, he still had
the team got tired of him, and they stopped listening to him.
I think Pete Carroll is a prime example of what I'm saying. If you watch Pete Carroll on the football field He's out there joking around with them and trying to be their buddies and trying to hang out with them because he's not trying to dictate to them. He's, you know, he's got this system where, look, you're the professionals. You know what you got to do. All we're doing is drawing up the plans and giving them names. You go out there and do it.
And also, I was going to say, Pete Carroll, also Pete Carroll's being himself. I was going to say for everybody, you got to be who you are. If that's who you are, personality-wise, be you. The main thing is don't be somebody you're not. And two, it could be a downfall because I think with Raheem Morris, I kind of caught out with him because he was pretty much being, I guess, the player's buddies, and you see how team kind of was lost and he got fired.
Okay.
Where he didn't right, he couldn't be their buddy no more because he's a head coach.
Okay, let's wrap up this college right now. I want to jump into this NFL.
Let's do it.
We could do the reactions. I want to jump in this topic right now. This hot topic that's been going on while we're at it right now. Recently, there's been a situation going on with the Miami Dolphins. I know everybody's heard about it. It's been a big part of the news. Jonathan Martin was a second year offensive tackle. He left the team. It was because they thought it was because they played a prank on him in the locker room. Then it became a situation with bullying between Richie Incognito. And now there's even more stuff starting to come out. Martin has checked himself into a hospital. Different things are going on. The NFL is looking into Incognito. Incognito's left phone messages. There's accusations of racism, bullying. A lot of stuff is going on. People are weighing in and out of it. Now it's time for CMT Firestorm to sink our teeth into it. What do you guys think about this situation? Let me start off with Tech. Let me start off with Icon Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, this story's not going away. I was saying, man, that he's not going to ever play football again. Ain't no way in heck that they're going to let this man play or a team. I mean, he went way beyond the stuff he was saying, man.
Are you talking about Richie Incognito?
Yeah. I mean, he came at me talking like that. Like, nah, it would be me and him. It wouldn't be that. I would have to, you know, if he give me a nod, we'd be rumbling, jumbling. When you talking about my mom and all this other type of stuff, what he was doing, and the coaches didn't know about this, I mean, they were saying, like, I don't know, I know it's probably going to happen within some days, but something, but it's going to be people losing their job over this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tex, are you back on?
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I had my phone on mute. I don't know what happened. I'm gonna stay with the football side of it. I'm not gonna get into the other side of it. What you have is a rudderless organization. You have a fractured organization. You got Richie Incognito, who was a damn fool. He was a fool at Oregon. Then when he transferred, he was a fool wherever he transferred to. And he's always been an asshole. Warren Sapp even come out and said, yeah, he called me this and he called me that. But this is a team that has no leaders. The players are scared. You know, you got this guy on the voicemail sitting back talking to Jonathan Martin like this. Yeah, fine. Maybe Martin should have defended himself. Maybe, he needed to be a man. You know what I'm saying? Maybe he show up with an AR-15 or something. You know what I'm saying? Maybe he can go be a man. But, I think Martin has a mental illness that might need to be treated. You know, because you 6'5", 350 pounds don't mean you, doesn't make you one of them Jaegers off Pacific Rim. You know what I'm saying? It just,
it just makes you 6'5", 350. So, you know, we're going from person to person with this. But it upsets me that you have players defending Incognito when it's like this is accepted. Incognito can be on a voicemail, nigga this, nigga that, and you know, and you go by what Sapp said, yeah, nigga this, and you know, even did y'all see his video where he's going through the bar running his mouth? Did y'all see that?
Yep.
You saw that? Man, I was like, okay. And then they just steady defending him, like, no, he's not a racist and that. Man, come on, man. This guy, so how does he feel like that about Martin? How does he feel like that about you, Mike Wallace? Or Cam Wake?
Yeah, which also made me mad. I didn't see who said it, but they said, some players said that Richie Incognito is more black than Jonathan Martin.
Yeah, it's like,
I'm ready to get into that right there.
And it's, but see, Clausel, that's why I said I was going to try to just keep it football. I wasn't going to go into that, you know, because you know what? Because if we do, yeah, but you know what? If we do, we'll be talking about Incognito for the rest of the night. We won't talk about nothing else. So,
that's true.
You know, this is the Dolphins. They're dysfunctional. Jeff Irie, this is a franchise that where the GM, the asshole GM, asking the damn player, is his mom a hoe? So how the hell is it gonna, you know, how the hell is it gonna go in the locker room? You know, so the GM don't have no damn sense. You know, so who got some sense around there? Nobody. So, you know, moving right along.
Also, too, I don't know if Texas and the guys, you know, they said it's teammates that's standing up for Incognito, man.
Yep,
oh,
yeah, exactly. And can I go first, Wiley? I want to say something first, though, Wiley,
yeah,
and then
ahead.
You can do it, because I know you got a lot to say. Hold up. Well, this is a combination here. You know, racism, black-on-black racism, post-traumatic slavery disorder among the players. I mean, come on, man. You know, but first of all, the dude is clearly a racist. You know what I mean? He's clearly a racist. And the thing that really interests me and what I'm noticing here is, in the media, because you know they always go with the hip-hop blame. They want to blame hip-hop for this. Chris Carter on TV today talking about, you know, in pop culture. You know, all that mess right there. This ain't got nothing to do with no dang on hip-hop because, you know, they've been saying the N-word since slavery. Black people have been saying that to each other since slavery. But that's another conversation in itself. But what the thing that's interesting to me is all these black players that are coming up here and supporting this dude. You know, that's what's really intriguing me here. Because if this dude was a black guy bullying a white guy, he'd be cut off the bat. And you guys, we all know that.
Absolutely.
He'd be cut immediately. He'd be cut immediately, you know. But it's just so interesting how we are so quick, you know, and hold on, first of all, and then you'll say he's more black than the rest of us or something like that. I mean, what kind of stuff is that?
Yeah,
you know?
That too.
Yeah.
All right, now do I get to interject?
I didn't think so. Go ahead, Wiley. Go ahead.
All right, now. I am one of those black people that is going to defend Incognito. And since I'm going to defend him, I would ask that you guys let me finish before you start telling me how I'm wrong.
I will.
Now, first and foremost, I want to put some perspective on this because I know some of your other callers are going to call and tell me that I'm the biggest Uncle Tom they've ever known. Anyway, the point is here. I have never played professional sports, but I have been in sports all my life. In college, my line brothers in my fraternity were part of the two national championship football teams for the University of Florida. My line brothers are in the NFL right now. I understand being around professional athletes. Why? I was around people that are professional athletes right now every single day. Okay? I want to start out with that. Secondly, I am in a fraternity. I don't know how many of you guys are in a fraternity, but I am in a fraternity. And I know what it means to be in a fraternity. If you are not in a fraternity, you don't know what it means. And if you want to judge it, fuck you, because you don't know what it means. Secondly, when you are in this group, you are a fraternity. Those boys in that football on that football team, that is their fraternity. They are a family. They are a team, but they are a family. What happens is this family is broke up into groups. When you go out to practice every day, they break you up into groups. The linemen go over here. The tackles go over here. The receivers go over here. The quarterbacks go over here. Everybody has their own coaches. Okay? Yes, they are one team, but they are broke up into individual groups. Those groups bond as their own separate fraternities, their own separate brotherhoods. They grow together because they have to do everything together. And they bond as a unit. When you have been working with the same people every single day for years, you guys learn how to joke with each other, say shit to each other. Now, the reason why black people are so mad at Incognito is because he's saying the word nigger, he's telling your mama jokes, and he's doing all...
This ain't just black people. It's not just black
okay, well, let me finish.
Though.
Let me finish. Like I said, don't interject.
Yeah, but you got to hurry it up, though.
Okay. But anyway, the point is, these people, wide receivers, they over there calling each other niggas. They over there talking mama jokes. My mama did this, or I'm going to put this in your mama's mouth, and they just giggling and laughing. Why? Because all of the receivers are black. All the running backs are black. All of the safeties are black. The only place on a football team where you got a majority of or more white people is the linemen. So when the linemen are trying to do what everybody else in their little groups are doing, all of a sudden you hear one of them call one of their fraternity brothers a nigger, and he done went and bumped his head. But you know what? The people on that line know what he's talking about. And they aren't offended. Why? Because they always joke and horse around and do this together. That's how they built their bond. This new dude comes in. He wants to be part of that line in that fraternity. But he has to understand that's how they bonded. It's talking shit to each other, doing things with each other. And one of those things, you know, they just joking with each other. Your mama this or this, that, the other. And he called him a half nigga. Come on. Do you honestly think that man would leave a message on his answering machine in 2013 calling him a nigga if they weren't always joking like that all the time? Now, this sensitive-ass 300-pound nigga might not like it because he ain't used to it. But that's how that fraternity works, and I understand that. And that's why it's easy for you to say Incognito is a racist, but I think he's part of a fraternity that understands him, and that's why his fraternity stands up for him. And that's what I'm saying.
How do we explain him being in a bar hollering nigga and...
With no shirt on being...
How do we
And Warren Sapp said he called him one too, on the field.
And he was their opponent.
He wasn't a part of that brotherhood. He wasn't a part of that fraternity.
Let me say my part real quick. I want to say this. You know, everybody. You know, a lot of people has a lot of views about this. What it comes down to is, first of all, you know, like Tech said, you know, Jonathan Martin, the dude has mental issues. That's clear. You know, like I said, when Tech brought it up a couple of weeks, you know, last week or whatever, I said that Miami should know better like this than when they dealt with Demetrius Underwood. You know, just because of the lineman, you know, I mean, seriously, people have mental problems. It's part of life, you know, and everybody, oh, he should be a man or all this stupid-ass stuff that Big Butt Kiss or whoever that was, he should take him to Fist City. It's like, dude, well, what if his idea of being a man is coming up there with an AR-15, you know? That could be his idea of being a sick person's mind. That could be his idea of being a man. You know, I don't see what, it has to do with people trying to be macho just because it's football, too. You know, like I said before, if you're in a room with Mike Tyson and Mike Tyson tell you to shut up, you're going to shut up. You know, no matter what, you're not the baddest man in that room. You're going to shut up. You know, so who knows what this, like I said, Richie Incognito has his issues. This dude's been a bully when he was at Oregon. He was a bully when he was at Nebraska. After he got kicked out of there, went to Nebraska.
Yeah.
Everybody who meets this guy comes along with a sour taste in their mouth. So all these people who say, yeah, they would have fought and did this, or they wouldn't have let him do this to them. I saw Antrell Roll do an interview. I wouldn't let Incognito do that to me because I'm a man. He ain't just going to do that to me. Well, Richie, you know, like I say, if you're that tough, there's $50 million out there for whoever can knock out Floyd Mayweather. So go and be tough over there. You know, all these tough guys and good punching dudes and all that, you know, whoever's tough. That's, you know, there's a place for that. This is a football field. This is a job, too. Like I say, this dude's coming out there to do a job. He's got people bothering him. And he wasn't in his right mental mind. So, what did you expect? What did you expect to happen? Like I said, to me, this is probably the best way it could have ended up. Like I said, it could have ended up far worse. You know, especially with all that's been going on in this country, all these random shootings there, you know. Like I said, everybody wants to take the macho point of view or say what they would have done. You know, next time you're around a group of grown men, ask them how many of them have actually ever been into a fight, and you'll be surprised by the results. Not a kid fight, a grown man fight where you're fighting for your life, and it's completely different. You know, like I said, I used to be a bouncer. I've seen dudes fight, seen dudes be macho, you know, and it's always the macho dudes end up getting beat up and going home alone, and it's the dudes that was in there worrying about bras that go home with the girls. So, you know, all that macho stuff and what they could have done, all that goes out the window. You know, that doesn't matter. All this other stuff, like I said, basically what this came down to, but you had a dude who was a butthole. Anybody who's probably been around John DeMartin could probably tell something was wrong with him. So he saw a dude that had a weakness, and he tried to take advantage of that weakness. He's a punk. You know, he's a punk himself. You try to punk another punk, that makes you a punk. You know, and he tried to take advantage of it. Martin left, and now the truth is coming out. You know, now the truth is coming out. Like I said, you know, and if people would have just waited instead of jumping all over the story like we always do, which is surprising for black men, we don't wait till the whole story comes out, even though we're the main ones who should do that because we know we get blamed for everything at first. You know, now it's coming out this dude has mental problems and he's taking himself into a hospital. You know, and like I said, if you're on the line with him, one of them dudes, you know, like I said, Incognito probably saw that. Okay, this dude's a punk. I can get, you know, whatever he got, $15,000 out of him or whatever. I can do it, you know, treat this dude how I want to treat him. You know, and that's all it was. It was a situation of a dude trying to punk another dude, and the dude just so happened to be crazy. Like I said, it could have went far worse. And, you know, hopefully they catch it. Hopefully Martin can get help, and hopefully Incognito can get what he deserves, too.
Well, I want to put this angle on it. Hold on. I want to put this angle on it. I'm looking at it like Jonathan Martin, he's a new guy coming in. Incognito is more of on the leadership committee. You know, Philman's the head honcho in regards to the team. So Martin's trying to get himself on higher on the pecking order. So I'm thinking he has to take this stuff from him. One, he's black. Two, it's a white guy bullying him. And, you know, he has to take this stuff because if he complains to Philman or something like that, and Incognito says, I'm not doing this, the film is probably going to believe Incognito because he's on the depth chart. So he's, I'm thinking Martin felt like he was in a lose-lose situation, so he had to deal with it until he couldn't take it anymore. That's how I looked at it, until he had evidence and proof on the message.
It's possible, but like I said, these dudes, they have to look at it like, you know, everybody says, you know, it's a game, it's a fraternity, this and that. It's a business, and a business is a job. When you file harassment against somebody in a workplace, they have to take that into consideration, or else they can be susceptible for a lawsuit themselves. So I'm hoping, it might have went down like you said, Carlson. I'm hoping it didn't. I'm hoping these people realize that this is a business and a job and took it seriously. But you know, like I said, we haven't heard the full story.
The reason why I mentioned what I mentioned is because I have seen some of my own frat brothers go to prison for 5 years for hazing. You know why they went to prison for 5 years for hazing? Because somebody came home to their girlfriend, and their girlfriend wanted to get laid, and they were too sore to get laid, so the girlfriend got mad and called the police.
Yeah, I mean, that could also happen.
And the next thing you know, five people are in jail because the girlfriend wanted to get laid and couldn't get laid, and she went and took everybody down because she wanted to get laid.
Or it could be like James Champion and they take the hazing too far and beat somebody to death.
Okay, I understand. There's no death here. We're just talking in general. What I'm saying is people on the outside don't understand what's going on the inside. And because they don't understand what's going on the inside, they don't care. All that matters to them is they're not getting what they want. And because they're not getting what they want to go and just throw everybody under the bus because they didn't get what they want.
That's not the case, though. Like I say, you can't just say it's whoever's on the outside. You got Warren Sapp. You got other players who were saying that they didn't like that behavior either. So you can't just say it's everybody on the outside.
He has a history.
Okay, but did Warren Sapp
exactly,
go and let the media? What I'm saying is you think Richie Incognito is the only person in football doing what he's doing? But you don't hear it coming from no other organizations. Why? Because they understand they are a fraternity, and they handle it internally.
Are you listening? Are you listening? This dude has a history of this, starting from college, probably starting when he was in high school.
And like I said to you, are you listening? Do you think he's the only one in the NFL doing it?
It don't matter. He's the only one getting caught right now. That's all we're talking about right now.
What I'm saying to you is there are probably 50 incognitos in the NFL. But the thing is, the rest of the people are not throwing the whole team under the bus because they got an incognito on their team.
But we're talking about Richie Incognito right now. We're not talking about the rest of everybody else.
And another thing, I want to put this angle on this, too. I think he was messing with him because he's light-skinned, similar to how these rappers – like, I don't know, somebody's put up the top 10 softest rappers and, like, half of them are light-skinned or something like that. You know, I think he was messing with him because he's light-skinned. You know, he's a light-skinned black guy in comparison. You know, he wouldn't mess with, like, a darker-skinned black guy. I think that has an element to it, too,
in
this whole situation.
I mean, your boy who was there was light-skinned, and I don't think, I mean, what's
you talking about Pouncey? You talking about Pouncey?
Yeah, Pouncey's next. No,
who's a... defensive end, Jason Taylor was light skinned, and he was pretty much a square. And I'm almost certain nobody was going to be punking him in that locker room.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I mean, like I said, it comes down to you got to figure this dude had a mental issue. These dudes, like I'll give Tony this, like he said, they were with him all the time, so they saw. Richie Incognito probably seen, okay, this is somebody who I can get over on. Like I say, these dudes just don't be – like I say, the Dolphins organization should have seen this. They had this happen before with Demetrius Underwood. They had a dude who was bipolar who had mental issues. So they should have seen, okay, something wrong with this cat, you know.
Well, they said
that was Minnesota, Mike.
No, but he played for Miami. Allegedly, the coach told Incognito to try to toughen up Martin.
Yeah, that's
what our source is saying.
Yeah.
Well, look how that ends up. They made a movie about that. It's called A Few Good Men. You know, you're toughening up somebody who might just have a problem, whose problem might be more than just toughening up, and you trying to toughen
right.
him up isn't going to help.
I'd love to hear the other callers.
Like I say, that
any
the
other
macho,
callers
the macho,
on?
The big,
yeah, we got one.
The macho approach is not the only approach today. You know, let me bring in Steve from 407. Steve, what's on? You're the CC Firestorm.
Hey, what's going on? I don't know. It's some y'all. I mean, we always want to take everything to the race. I feel you. But I mean, I can't go to that just for the simple fact, you know,
Incognito, that guy, he is really crazy, man. That dude is crazy.
Thank you.
So, that dude is crazy. And just like he was saying, man, he probably saw Buddy was weak. I could take advantage of this dude. The team thought, like, they were, like, best of friends. And this is what the team said. They thought they were best of friends. The voicemail that he recorded and all that, Martin was passing it around and laughing and joking about it. So what does that tell you about Martin? If it was such an issue back then when the whole team knew about the voicemail and knew about everything and he's passing it around like it's funny. So if it's not funny now, right? Because you're looking for a reason to show everybody that you got problems. So I'm just going to blow up Incognito's spot because he's already the problem guy. So that's just how I look at it as far as that, man. You know, it's just, you know, and the thing with the team getting up and leaving, and they did it to everybody. It wasn't just Martin. They did it to Tannehill. They did it to all the little rookies. So, you know, I listen to Joe Rogan. I listen to all these talk shows in Miami. All of WQAM is on my app. I listen to it all day long. And it's just the fact that, you know, the media is only going to share what they want to share. And of course they can make anybody look like a bad guy. And who is Warren Sapp to talk? He was one of the dirtiest talkers in the game. You know what I mean? So
let me ask you this, as a Miami fan, don't you think that the Dolphins should have been sensitive to this? Like I say, especially what would happen to Demetrius Underwood, somebody who tried to cut his own head off.
Yeah, I mean,
shouldn't they have somebody who's on the lookout for that sort of thing? Hey, something's not right with this guy.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, they should have been precautious, but at the same time, no.
I mean, especially like I said, in today's world, we had who was that? Jovan Belcher just committed suicide, killed his girlfriend, killed his baby. I mean, come on, dude. It's more than just, like I said, it's more than just the macho approach of get this dude tough or this dude's a punk. Sometimes people just have issues, bro. And you know, and no matter how much you know, that's like trying to beat it. That's like trying to beat a kid that got bipolar disorder. No matter how much you beat him, he's still going to have bipolar disorder. He's going to act up.
Yep.
Yeah, he can do all the praying and everything. It ain't going to change it for the simple fact that he got a disorder. But anyway, I'm just saying, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, if dude is soft, he got low self-esteem, he's obviously got problems that stem from something else. The problem is he didn't know how to let nobody know he needed help. You know,
some people saying he told Philbin, and some people saying he didn't. So like, I think that's going to come out. That's going to come out as this investigation goes on, whether he actually told somebody, you know, told somebody.
And this is my
not,
thing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is my thing. Why did he, Philbin, just cut Chad Johnson the day after the whole thing with Evelyn Long or whatever, and then this guy has proof of him saying the N-word, all that, and he didn't even do anything with this guy.
Because it was a joke amongst the team already from back in April. They already knew about this. This wasn't nothing that they didn't know about. It was a joke amongst the team. Martin was telling everybody, look what the Incognito left on my phone. Ha, 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 ha. He's laughing. So if somebody's laughing about something that when you blow it under the rug, like, oh, okay, this guy doesn't even care. That's the point I'm trying to make. If it was a big issue back in April, should have said something. Not try to cop out because you got real mental issues and throw another dude under the bus.
Let me ask you this question, though. If Philbin and these dudes and Jeff Ireland and these cats heard about it in April, even if they thought it was a joke, shouldn't they have taken it upon themselves to investigate it and see what happened?
They probably did it. You don't know what happened.
Especially with Richie Incognito's background. First of all, how did Incognito even do all this stuff and nobody heard about that? Now, so like I said, I don't know if Incognito's racist or not. All I know is that this was a black player. We would have heard about all this craziness that he's been through in his whole career. Now we're just now starting to hear about all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, the thing with Chad Johnson, that was in his contract, so that's why he was gone. They told him you can have any. They pretty much told him when he got to the team, you can have no mess ups, no nothing. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that, because why would they tell him that? Chad Johnson never had behavioral problems. He's never been suspended. Like I say, people put those labels on him, but Chad Johnson and Terrell Owens have never been suspended or been arrested or anything besides his situation with Longoria.
Wait.
And
he said he'd never been arrested? Did you say Chad Johnson had never been arrested?
In the NFL,
Longoria.
Since he's been in the NFL.
They try to put that label on them. I mean, even Randy Moss's thing, you know, they tried to make him a big criminal over, you know, the little thing he did up in Minnesota, but he had never really gotten that type of trouble, you know.
I was gonna say also too, Chad Johnson. The reason why also he got cut because he was in the group of crime anyway. He wasn't the same player, so hey, you know.
He could have made that roster though. He could have, like I said, I think once again, I think as this story goes on, we're gonna hear more and more is gonna come out about this situation, as it always does with these type of stories.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's dead. I don't know y'all now. They said Roger Goodell just appointed a lawyer to investigate. Cause we're gonna be at the Dolphins facilities. I guess we're gonna be investigating the whole thing.
Anyway, let me put y'all hold, Steve. I wanna bring in this call from 770, what's on? What's up? We're on with TNT Firestar.
What's going on, Clausell? This is Amari.
Oh, what's up, man? What's up?
What's going on, Amari?
What's going on, y'all? Just listening to you guys talk about the incognito thing. I actually, I'm kind of mixed on the whole situation. I mean, I do think there's some racism there. Incognito has a lot of history. But at the same time, I kind of agree with what Tony was saying about it's a fraternity. And in this particular instance, this is a gladiator sport. I mean, this isn't ballet or racquetball we're talking about. We're talking in the trenches, the most physical game that we know and that we love to watch. You know, all the different problems you've seen. When Romanowski was playing ball, he was your first incognito. And I agree with Tony. I mean, there's 50 incognitos. And obviously we're not talking about those guys now. We're talking about the guys that's being accused of all these different things. We have to see more things come out of this as time goes on. But, I mean, it's the same thing with the Saints and the bounty scandal. It's the same thing with Saf was talking about putting $5,000 on hits and knocking guys out of the game. I mean, I think as outsiders, we don't really truly know what's going on in those locker rooms. And we can only just...
I understand that, but the thing is, it'd be different if you weren't having NFL players come out and say, no, this did not happen to me, and if it did, I would have done this. I would have done that. I mean, there's guys that are coming out and saying that either this didn't happen like this or no, this never does happen. There's a difference between having the rookie carry your pad and do this or fill his car with popcorn as opposed to having him pay for you to take a $15,000 trip to Las Vegas.
Because he wasn't even a rookie this year. So, I mean, that's where it gets a little strange because of the fact that, you know, he was a second-year player, and you hear about this stuff happening your first year, and you think, okay, he's a second-year player
now. In Incognito's message, he said, I don't care, you're still a rookie. He said that on the message you have.
Right.
The dude's
and
crazy.
No, I agree he's crazy. Like I said, I mean, going back to what I said, this is a gladiator sport. I mean, this isn't ballet we're talking about. And at the same time, even if the Dolphins cut this guy off the team, I mean, I disagree with Mike. He will play again because he is crazy, and that's what the owners want. You know, and the reality is, I mean, I don't agree with the players not trying to come to the aid of the part, and I think they should have held on. It's too far. But at the same time, I agree with Tony. It's a fraternity. And there's so many things that we don't know that go on in these fraternities. And I think as fans, we would be appalled if we could really go inside the locker room and really hear what's being said. I mean, look at Romanowski, what he did to J.J. Stokes.
I understand that, but a fraternity, the point of a fraternity is unity and brotherhership.
Well, no,
I mean, where do these cats be at when we need to do is be broke and be homeless and on the streets and losing their houses.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying by that is the fraternity, what Tony was saying, is just what goes on. I mean, the solidarity.
I mean, let's call that a group then, or call it an organization.
Right,
let's not call it a fraternity then.
Well, I mean,
because, like I said, where were the fraternity people when they were speaking out about Mike Vick? You know, and the owner told them,
yeah,
you know, you better not say nothing else. We're gonna fine you. You know, look what happened to Pouncey. Look what happened to Pouncey when he spoke out about Aaron Hernandez. And Aaron Hernandez is supposedly innocent until proven guilty. And they told him,
well,
we're going to suspend you if you wear that hat again.
I mean,
and
I can see what you're saying. I mean, that's a matter of semantics. But what I'm saying is that in this kind of situation, we have to see more and more that comes out of it. But I don't think that Incognito is as bad as what the media is trying to make him out to be. I think he's a lion.
I don't think the media is trying to make him out to be that bad. I think if it was a different situation, I think they would have had him come out and be completely bad.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. You see all these guys defending him. The media is clearly showing all these brothers defending him.
Exactly.
They're trying to make him look good, you know?
Yeah, to me, like you said, his own words, he's going to weather this storm, and I think he's going to make it through this completely fine.
No, just like Riley Cooper.
I think he'll make it.
Oh, yeah, that story, of course, that's going to be gone away. We ain't going to hear about that no more.
You don't even hear about the Riley Cooper story no more.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, but I just think that a lot of these things now, when they hit the press, you know, everything's sensationalized, and it's trying to get that wow factor out of people. And a lot of the black players, I wish they would have put a back mark a little bit more than what they did, instead of saying what I would have done and what could have been done. I agree with that statement. You know, we always try to find what machismo really is, but you don't really know what you're going to do until you're in that situation.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I mean, so I can totally agree with you guys on that statement, but we'll have to see as the time goes on, the story goes on, more evidence comes out. If Incognito was pushed by the coaches, then that becomes something else.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, so that's all I got to say on that. But you guys have a good one. I'll keep listening.
All right.
All right.
All right.
What's up, Mari?
All right. Hi,
Mari.
Good to hear from you.
All right. Let me bring back in a Tony here before we wrap things up. Tony.
I enjoyed hearing the callers. I really did. Like I said, for me, there is so much more going on in this situation, and so much more going on than you hear on ESPN. And there is so much more going on that team and every other team in the NFL that you are not hearing about that happens every single day. And the reason why everybody wants to jump and say this is racism is because now you are hearing a white boy say nigga. You think he the first white boy that don't say nigga in the NFL?
You're missing the point, bro. That's not even what we're really even talking about. We're talking about his behavior.
Okay, what's the point?
The biggest part of his behavior that everybody's focused on is that he said the word nigga. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You're actually the only one that's focused on that.
They keep playing the tape.
No, it isn't. The media is making this dude come out looking good from this. The media, ESPN, is supplying players to say that he's more black than Jonathan Martin.
Yep.
So what media are you looking at?
I'm looking at the media that keeps showing this tape and playing this tape, and y'all talking about he in the club yelling nigga. Obviously, the most important thing that they're trying to make Incognito be is a racist.
That's like I said, that's little or no part of what's going on right now. But it, I mean,
yeah, making him look like a racist, and making him look like a guy that can get away with saying racist stuff. That's what they're trying to make it look like.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
What I'm telling you is there is 50 other white guys in the NFL that are incognitos.
Okay,
right.
So that makes
we
sense.
Know that. You're 100% right. I agree with you there. I mean, there's probably 32 owners that are like incognitos too, but, you know, it is what it is. He got caught.
Exactly.
But what I'm saying is, the point that I'm trying to make about that whole thing is, why haven't you heard about the other incognitos? Is because of the fraternity. And they keep it
maybe,
to
maybe,
themselves.
Maybe,
they do
maybe,
not let
maybe,
the
maybe,
world
maybe not,
know what's going on
enough.
Inside.
Maybe they're not stupid enough to make a table of it and let themselves get taped down.
No, it ain't
maybe
stupid. It's a fraternity. They are brothers. And they any problem they have, they
well,
handle
they
with
it. What he was
the problem
he
with Martin is he took it outside the fraternity.
This has been Martin. I'm talking about when he was at the bar. No NFL players were there. He was there making a video cursing and saying the N-word with no shirt on. That had nothing to do with the NFL. What are you talking about?
But did that tape come out before this incident?
It has nothing to do with the
so
NFL.
So it wasn't a problem before this incident. What I'm telling you is, if it was a problem, you would have seen that tape before ever seeing what happened with
Martin.
That's
not what you were just saying. You were just saying because it's a fraternity and they're supposed to be used to it. Then Jonathan Martin wanted to break it, and I told you this has nothing to do with Jonathan Martin. This has to do with Incognito's history.
No, it has everything to do
like
with
that.
Jonathan Martin, because Jonathan Martin didn't want to play by the fraternity's rules. Now, you all are saying that he doesn't want to play by the fraternity's rules because he has a mental issue and he can't psychologically or emotionally or whatever handle those rules. That happens every day in a fraternity. When you are pledging people, some of those people aren't strong enough to make it, so they drop out.
Strong, dude. First of all, you're not listening. If he has a mental issue, that has nothing to do with strong. You understand that, right?
Psychology is strength. Psychology is strength. I'm not talking about his muscles. I'm talking about his brain power.
Psychology has nothing to do with brain power or strength. Psychology is a science. It goes over chemical imbalances.
Are you kidding?
And your
I
mind.
Promise you,
yes,
you have to be stronger mentally than physically to do
bro.
A lot of things in this world.
Okay. All right. Let me put you back on hold here. We're about to go ahead and wrap up this episode. Wow. Okay. We're in our last 2 minutes here. Is there anything you guys want to get in before we get off?
I mean, the whole thing, it's just, you know, it's just another racial story that's just been going on these past few years. I don't know if anybody's been noticing that. Ever since Barack Obama's been elected, there's been so many racial stories, like one incident after another. You know, I don't know if you guys are noticing that or not, you know.
Yeah,
but,
very true.
Yeah, so it's going to be something else in the future, probably.
Ain't no probably is. I hate to say it.
Text.
I like how you know, they talk to Troy Polamalu, and I like how the Steelers do things in their fraternity. Big badass Steelers hitting everybody upside the head. Y'all heard what Polamalu said? Oh, with the rookies, you know, we didn't do anything with that. We always put our hands out. And whether they needed a place to stay, some food to eat, they needed a new jacket, they needed new this, new that, they needed a family to be taken care of, we took care of them. So, you know, I
like
that better. That sounds like a family. Now, that sounds like a frat right there. And these are the Steelers. James Harrison, Lamar Woodley, Farrier, Timmons, some head busts.
Exactly.
The toughest MFRs you've seen.
Feel sound.
Maybe we should put Watley on for a final statement, though.
Go ahead, put him back on.
All right, put Watley back on. What's up, Watley? You got a final statement?
Yeah. Boy,
boy, y'all are crazy. Anyway, no, I enjoy the discussion. I enjoy the debate. And I enjoy the different perspectives. But I am the type of person that I am going to see the black or the shadow when everybody else is looking into the light. And to me, while the light is shining on Incognito right now, I'm looking in the shadows and saying there's something else going on. And that's what I'm trying to focus on. It's what's going on in the shadows while the spotlight is on Incognito. Because like they said, this man was running around laughing and joking about Incognito calling him a nigga on that phone a few months back. So now all of a sudden it's a situation. But I don't think that the team made it a situation. I think that the media made it a situation. And because the media made it a situation, now the team has to address that situation, and the NFL has to address that situation. And like Clausell said, society has to address the racial issue that has become the issue since our president became black.
I think this is the issue.
What do you mean they're going to address it? All right, when you say address the issue, I don't think they're going to address the issue. They're just going to come up with more and more of these stories. That's just what I think is going to happen.
Exactly.
No,
I think,
well,
well,
I mean,
honestly,
as far as
honestly,
Miami
is
concerned, I think Miami is going to address the issue. They're going to say, okay, we got a no-tolerance law. We just wrote this new all contracts, this. It's just like they do when somebody gets caught hazing. All of a sudden, they put in all these new stipulations. Is that going to change anything? No. But
anybody that needs to get regulations tells them to don't beat somebody to death, that person has a problem. I have another issue. The issue is that I think that Elf is a superhero, and I think that his power is to create an argument. Tony can create an argument. I can tell Tony my first name, and he would argue with me about that. So we both in agreement on our first name.
No, I don't like to argue. I just don't like bullshit.
You don't?
I'm one of those people. I get straight to the point. Why be around the bush? Don't be around the bush. Let's get straight to the point.
You're arguing with me.
Straight to the point. Don't beat around the point. Don't nipple. Don't nipple on the nipple. Let's get straight to the point.
You were arguing with me about 30 minutes or something. Nobody was talking about it. I kept going, Tony, nobody's talking about that. But you refuse to believe it.
Well, hold on. Back on Incognito Wiley. So you don't think Incognito is a racist?
Look, I cannot say Incognito is not a racist, but what I am saying is I don't think what Incognito said to Martin makes him a racist. Just because he called him a nigger doesn't make him a racist. You don't know the inside story of why he felt like he had the right to call him a nigger.
So at your job, if one of your coworkers walks up to you, a white man, and calls you a nigger, he has a right to call you a nigger.
And y'all
I got
cool.
Plenty of white friends. You forget I grew up in East Tennessee, went to an all-white high school. I got plenty of good friends that are like my brothers that can call me a nigger to my face, and I would smile with them and say, fuck you too, nigger.
Nah, my white friends can't run up on me like that. My black friends can't run up on me like that.
You asked me about my friends.
I didn't ask you about your friends.
You asked me about my friends. And yes, I have white friends that could call me a nigga and it wouldn't upset me. But you know what? At the same time, if somebody outside of me and my friend's friendship was to hear my friend call me a nigga, they might get offended and go tell somebody. And then all of a sudden, me and my friends got problems because they don't understand me and my friend's friendship.
Like I said, I don't know how they do things in Memphis, Tennessee. I grew up in Oakland, California, and Bobby and Huey made sure no white people was going to call us nick out here. So I don't know how they do things
out
here.
Until your face, that is. They'll call you behind your back, though.
They can call me anything behind my back. What they say to my face is going to be a different story.
No, I said, right. But you're going to tell me none of your black friends called you nigga?
I call them nigga. I say nigga 100 times every
morning. Okay, well, that's what I'm saying.
Harder.
This was my best friend. To me, this is my best friend. I don't see them as white, and they don't see me as black. They are my best friend. So if I call them a nigga and they call me a nigga, I don't see them calling me a nigger. They're calling me a nigga because we boys. That's what nigga means to me. You my boy. My
nigga. You a nigga. When I say nigga and I say, like I said, really my friends don't call me a nigga. But when I say nigga, I actually mean I'm calling somebody a nigga. In every sense of the word, nigga, nigga.
Hey Tony, you think you can talk to your Mexican friends and you think you can call them beaner or wetback? Or if you got
absolutely.
Irish friends,
if we got it like that, I can call them whatever they want to call.
But see, that's their thing. What about if you got some Irish friends? You can go like, oh, you Mick.
Absolutely.
Really?
Like I said, if
you had Jewish friends, you call them the K-word.
You can't tell me what me and my friend can say to each other. Our friendship
is our friendship.
You don't get to tell us how we run and conduct our friendship.
It's only acceptable when you're calling somebody a nigga. No other race says that.
No. See, that's what I'm saying. You guys seem to think that you guys can control what other people do. If it's my friendship, it's my friendship.
If I let my white friend call me a nigga
and he lets me call him a honky, that's between me and my friend.
If y'all don't like it, stay the fuck out of it.
But don't hear it and then want everybody to be upset because y'all don't understand it.
This is my thinking, Tony. I grew up around white people too. We have four different hosts on this show that are in four different parts of the country. None of us have heard of that except for what you're talking about. And I went to school in the South too. I've been in Tennessee. To me, Tennessee was very racist. But besides that, like I say, you got four different people from four different parts of the country. All of us grew up with white people. Texas wife is Vietnamese. I mean, we got people who deal with different races all the time. So it ain't like we're all sitting up, only with black people. I got white people in my family.
It's wrong for me to call somebody outside my culture what other people call them, but it's all right for me to call another black person a nigga. It's all right for him to call me a nigga because y'all both niggas, right? What I'm saying to you is, if we are best friends,
then I get to say whatever I'm okay with because we are best friends. See, once again, you're arguing the point that nobody says. When you asked Six that, he said no. Nobody says that to me. When you asked me that, I said no. Nobody said that. So, you're once again arguing the point where both of y'all are lying to tell me you ain't never called another black man. No, nobody said that.
So now you're gonna but that's not how we talk.
Before, but we couldn't say that you were lying. So now you're going to tell us that we're lying, right?
So you going to tell me in your whole life you ain't never called a black person a nigga?
In my whole life, no. I said I call white people niggas, but I call everybody a nigger, and I'm calling them a nigger. Now I'm calling them my homeboy, like, oh, that's my nigger. If I call somebody a nigger,
I didn't say nigger.
Oh.
There's a difference between a nigger and a nigger. All
right.
How do I know this? Because I'm a college professor that teaches cultural diversity. And there is a difference between a nigger and a nigga.
This is what he told me. Psychology was about playing power.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up today. Very interesting conversation. Hopefully we can kind of continue a little bit of this next week in regards to race and sports. We're probably going to have like a 15-20 minute segment on that next week. So, again, we'd like to thank everybody for coming out, listening to the show. It was great as usual. Next week it'll be the same. If you want to listen to the
hopefully we might get a special guest. If we get a special guest, we think we're gonna get. He's gonna bring Tony Wiley to justice finally.
Yes, definitely.
I take all comers.
Definitely. So
I take all comers.
Oh God.
So whoever he is, bring it.
Don't say that, Wiley. Don't say that. But the thing is,
I fear no man. I fear no man. Remember that.
All right.
Bring your best because I can promise you, you're going to get mine.
All right. We'd like to thank everybody for coming to listen to the show tonight. If you want to listen to the recap of the show, we're going to put our show on our Facebook page, our Twitter page, Block Talk Radio. Again, thank you for coming out. Lovely show. Make sure you check us out next week, 8:30 to 10:30 Eastern Time. CMT Firestorm. Peace out.
Bye-bye, everybody.